If you can understand what I'm saying, I got a little extra bass there, sounds like. You know what it's like to want to fit in. You know what it's like to try to fit in. If you're a younger sibling and your older brother or sister is several years older than you, you probably had occasions where they had older friends over and you were not allowed to tag along. You were too young. You didn't fit in. In a variety of circumstances, all of us have known what it's like not to fit in with some group. All of us have known the feeling of loneliness that can come as a result of not being accepted by those we admire. We don't look right. We don't dress right. We don't talk right. We don't know the right things. Some are less concerned about it than others. Some people thrive on being different. But most people want to fit in somewhere. And usually, at the heart of this issue is the desire to be like others. When we admire others, we want to be accepted by them. And it's natural to want to be like them. We live in a nation that prizes individuality, and yet there is an overwhelming desire by so many to mimic, to imitate, to be like others. But this is not a new phenomenon. This is an age-old struggle. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, and that certainly applies to this topic. Ancient Israel had a problem with this issue. They wanted to be like the nations around them. Repeatedly, they were drawn to the behavior, the practices, the idolatry of their neighbors. They wanted to mimic. They wanted to emulate their activities. They wanted to be accepted. They wanted to be like their neighbors. They wanted to fit in. In Ezekiel 11 and verse 12, God said to his people, "You will know that I am the Lord, for you have not followed my decrees or kept my laws, but you have conformed to the standards of the nations around you." Our text this morning will be 1 Samuel chapter 8. We'll begin reading with 1 Samuel 8 verses 1 through 9. We're told that when Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, "You are old and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." But when they said, "Give us a king to lead us," this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord. And the Lord told him, "Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods. So they are doing to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly, and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights." At this time, we know Israel did not have a visible king. They had judges who were appointed by God on an as-needed basis. Their armies did not rally around a national king. But the problem here was that they were doing more than just wanting to add a physical king. The problem was that they were rejecting a spiritual king, a spiritual God. And so they came to Samuel the prophet and they began to make some requests. They come to Samuel and they explain their dilemma and they offer him what to them seems like a reasonable, logical solution. But first I want to make an observation about Samuel. The people came to Samuel and in trying to help him understand their dilemma, they say some hurtful things. In verse 5 they said, "Look, you are now old and your sons do not follow your ways." Wow. That's no way to win friends and influence people, is it? "Look, Samuel, you're kind of worn out and useless. you're obsolete. But then to add injury to insult, they denigrate his sons. First they tell him that he's old, and then they tell him that his sons are terrible. And if the first comment didn't rub him the wrong way, then the second comment would likely do so. But Samuel was made of stronger stuff than that. The next verse tells us that their comments displeased Samuel, but not for the reason we might suppose. Verse 6 says, when they said, give us a king to lead us, this is what displeased Samuel. The thing that offended Samuel, the thing that displeased Samuel, was that they were rejecting God and asking for a physical king to reign over them in God's place. Samuel is not bothered by their personal insults. He's not insulted by their disparaging remarks. Those don't even seem to have fazed him. The thing that bothered Samuel was that God was disrespected. Personal insults are always going to come. Some people don't know how to start a serious conversation without first throwing an insult across the bow. And like Samuel, we need to learn not to be affected by that. The statement that bothered Samuel was the statement that bothered God. What offended Samuel was what offended God. First, we see that fitting in with the world is rejection of God. In verse 7, God explains that the people had not rejected Samuel. The people were rejecting him, God. And the issue here was not just that the people wanted a king again. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, Moses told Israel that at some appointed time, God is going to give you a king. So the problem was not as much that they wanted a king. The problem was that they wanted to be like the people around them. They wanted to be like the people of the world. Again, they wanted to fit in with those who held other values. Now let's read verse 8 together and notice the term that God used to describe their desire to fit in. May surprise us. God said, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now, this is interesting. There wasn't anything. They didn't come to Samuel and say, we want to make another god. We want to prepare an idol and fall down to the idol. But God says that Israel had a history of idolatry, a history of forsaking the true God and serving other gods. And God says that their desire to fit in, their desire to be like those around them, was the desire to serve other gods. He says that their desire to fit in with the world was idolatry. They wanted a king who would call the shots, a king who would live in a palace and lead their armies out to victory on the battlefield. They wanted to look like others. They wanted to fit in on the world stage. They had a greater desire to fit in with the world than to submit to and serve the Creator. And God said that was idolatry. And we need to think about that. When we want to fit in with those around us more than we want to be faithful to God, God says that is idolatry. Then Samuel tells them about the cost of fitting in. Samuel made it clear that this request would change everything. Once they set up a king to rule over them, their lives would never be the same. God tells Samuel that God wants Samuel to tell the people what having a king will look like, what it will cost them. And so we can read where Samuel does that in verses 10 through 18. Starting in verse 11, it says, Samuel said, this is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his horses and chariots, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest. Still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. Samuel told the people that things are not going to work out as maybe they had anticipated. Their kings are going to tax, tax, and tax. Their kings are going to take, take, and take. He said, a king will take your sons, verse 11. He'll take your daughters, verse 13. He'll take your fields, your vineyards, your olive groves, verse 14. He'll take a tenth of your grain and your vintage, verse 15. He'll take your servants and donkeys, verse 16. He'll take your sheep, verse 17. That's what happens when we want to be like the people of the world. The cost is always far greater than meets the eye. The world will take and take and take, because that's what the world does. And when we try too hard to fit in with those around us, the price we will pay will always be greater than we imagined. You recall how Samuel had concluded his warning. His last remarks were these, beginning with verse 18. Samuel told the people, a king will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you'll cry out for relief from the God you've chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. And then verses 19 and 20 tells us that the people refused to listen to Samuel. They said, no, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles. Verse 21 says, when Samuel heard all that the people had said, he repeated it before the Lord, and the Lord answered, listen to them and give them a king. When we want to fit in, when we want to become like the world, we become deaf to God. It doesn't matter what God's word says. It doesn't matter what other Christians may say. It doesn't matter what consequences we've been warned about. When we want to be like the world, we become deaf to God. So even Samuel told them, even after he told them about all the sacrifices and all the costs that would be involved in having a king, Israel still insisted that they wanted a king. Why would they do that? Why do we sometimes do that? We insist on doing what we want to do because we've somehow convinced ourselves that it's reasonable. It's perfectly reasonable. The desire to have a king made perfect sense to Israel. They could state the facts. Samuel was old. Samuel's sons were terrible. They didn't walk in his ways. And if Samuel's sons took over their father's leadership role, it would bring corruption, because corrupt leaders will corrupt the nation. It seems reasonable that setting up a king would prevent the nation from falling into corruption. So the people could argue that the future of the nation was at stake. If they didn't do something, the nation would inevitably fall into corruption. The people have it all worked out, and it makes perfect sense. Yes, Samuel was old. Yes, his sons were corrupt, but this didn't mean that God no longer had the power to take care of the people. Remember Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9? God said, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Had the people forgotten their history? Had they forgotten what God had done for them? When they were in bondage in Egypt, did the Israelites reason their way out of that? Did they improvise a logical solution to their problem? Or did God in His power deliver them with a mighty hand? Did God need their help? Did God need their counsel? And some of Jesus' last words to His apostles in Mark 16, verses 15 and 16, Jesus told them to go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And you know that Jesus did that without calling a board meeting? Jesus did that without consulting the apostles. He did that without going through the neighborhoods of Judea and taking a survey regarding what people wanted in a religious group. Jesus did that on His own because He is God. Jesus provided a way for mankind to be saved, and He did so without any input from the world around Him. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said that Christians are to be salt and light. The thing about salt and light is that they stand out. And sometimes that's not what we want. We want to blend in. We want to fit in. We want to be like those around us. Being what Christ would have us to be requires us being different than those around us. As you meet people, as you talk to people about religious matters, about the Bible, about God, you may sometimes find yourselves being intimidated when you talk to them about church. And maybe they attend a church that has hundreds or even thousands of members. You may be embarrassed when they talk about their worship with a full band and recreational facilities and lots of accommodations, and then they ask you about worship at your church. And here we are in the 21st century still talking about authority and sin and commitment and following God. And sometimes the pressure of such situations causes us to want to fit in with the people of the world. What can we do when we realize that we've been guilty of trying to fit in with the world like Israel did in the days of Samuel? Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 12, we see this issue addressed as the people came together for the coronation of King Saul. In 1 Samuel 12, verse 1, we read that Samuel said to all Israel, "I have listened to everything you said to me and have set a king over you." Then after some introductory remarks, we pick up in verse 6 and read that Samuel said to the people, "It is the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron and brought your ancestors up out of Egypt." Now notice the emphasis here. Notice what God is doing and notice the responses as he goes through this history lesson. "It's the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron and brought your ancestors up out of Egypt." Verse 7, "Now then, stand here because I'm going to confront you with evidence before the Lord as to all the righteous acts performed by the Lord for you and your ancestors." He says, verse 8, "After Jacob entered Egypt, they cried to the Lord for help, and the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, who brought your ancestors out of Egypt and settled them in this place. But they forgot the Lord their God. So he sold them into the hand of Sisera, the commander of the army of Hazor, and into the hands of the Philistines and the king of Moab who fought against them. They cried out to the Lord and said, 'We have sinned. We have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and Ashtoreths. But now deliver us from the hand of our enemies and we will serve you.' Then the Lord sent Jerubbaal, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel, and he delivered you from the hands of your enemies all around you so that you lived in safety. But when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, was moving against you, you said to me, 'No, we want a king to rule over us,' even though the Lord your God was your king. Now here's the king you've chosen, the one you asked for. See, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve and obey him and do not rebel against his commands, and if both you and the king who reigns over you follow the Lord your God, good. But if you do not obey the Lord, and if you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you as it was against your ancestors. Now then, stand still and see this great thing the Lord is about to do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest now? I will call on the Lord to send thunder and rain, and you will realize what an evil thing you did in the eyes of the Lord when you asked for a king. Then Samuel called on the Lord, and that same day the Lord sent thunder and rain. So all the people stood in awe of the Lord and of Samuel. People all said to Samuel, "Pray to the Lord your God for your servants so that we will not die, for we have added to all our other sins the evil of asking for a king." Saul reminds the people of Israel's history in turning away from God in order to be like those around them. Samuel confronts the people with the evil they had done in rejecting God and asking for a king. The people recognize that they've done wrong, they confess their sin, and they ask Samuel to pray for them. And then in verse 20, Samuel says, "Do not be afraid. You've done all this evil, yet do not turn away from the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Do not turn away after useless idols. They can do you no good, nor can they rescue you because they are useless." Then in verse 24, he says, "Be sure to fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. Consider what great things he has done for you. Yet if you persist in doing evil, both you and your king will perish." When we've turned our back on the Lord in some manner, when we've chosen fitting in with the world over obedience to God, just like Israel, we need to repent and we need to confess our sin in prayer to the Lord. And then, like Samuel said, we need to be sure to fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. That's the remedy for having turned away from the Lord. Now we fast forward 1,000 years from Samuel's time until the time of Jesus, where once again Israel rejected God as their king. They chose a king of this world over Jesus as their king. In John 19, verses 12 through 15, we're told that Pilate sought to release Jesus, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king," speaking of Jesus, "speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour, and Pilate said to the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." All of us must choose who's going to be our king. All of us must choose whether we're going to follow Jesus as our king or whether we're going to choose to be like those around us. Maybe that you're here this morning and you're at a point of a walk with the Lord in your life that you realize that you need to be baptized into Christ. Or maybe, like the people of Israel, you've turned away from the Lord and you want to correct that and you want the prayers of the church. If there's some way we can assist you in your efforts to walk with the Lord, you can come forward and make that known while together we stand and sing.